Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
That's me, Karen Cataline. How nice of you to join us. It is Spouting Off. Good afternoon. It is 2 o'clock in the Mountain Time Zone, 4 o'clock Eastern, and you're listening to BBS Radio Station 1. I am pleased, proud, and privileged. Oh my goodness, that's too much alliteration to be with you on this, our 63rd show of Spouting Off. Tomorrow's the first day of spring. Is it spring where you are? Baseball's coming. I remember a person who I studied with. You know, I studied a little bit of Judaism with this teacher. And she said that people are healthier if they live in a climate with four seasons. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what she said. And here was her reasoning. She said that when people live in places like California and Florida that have only two climates, sometimes only one, where it's always beautiful, things are always blooming, the seasons don't go through changes, it gives you a false sense of immortality, like you have all the time in the world. But when you are in sync with nature, which human beings are, whether they want to be or not, I mean, psychologically, they may not be, but physically, things are born, things die, things mature. People's voices crack like mine just did. And somehow she thought that that was a healthier way to go about life, just to know and to be more connected to the birth of things, the death of things, the blooming of things, and how life indeed is passing, and so you better get to it. That was her view. Don't know if it's yours. I'm ready to spout off on the issues of the day. But if you have thoughts on that or what I'm about to spout off on, please don't hesitate to join us. Toll free, 888-627-6008. You can also call direct, 323-744-4831. Well, I have a theme today. But before I get to my monologue, I do want to tell you that I have a wonderful guest coming on a little later in the program. Her name is Renee Jolly, and I just love having these fascinating people on this show. Renee Jolly is the parent of a son who was falsely accused by a female student, and he was wrongfully expelled from his university. Renee is going to tell us that story and how it is that all of us ought to be concerned about it. As you well know, our country and our world is changing incredibly fast with policies and issues, if you will, that are being hoisted upon us that fit an agenda that we didn't necessarily vote for. As a matter of fact, I'm certain that we didn't. We didn't vote for this stuff. And yet, here we are having this stuff hoisted upon us. So Renee Jolly is going to join us. Now to the issues of the day. There are always more than I can possibly cover. But here's the thing that is sticking in my craw today. I would like to know, are the lights going out on free expression in this country? No matter how old you are, you know, if you are the age of consent, you remember when you felt comfortable and at ease and able to express yourself and the views you held regardless of whether anybody agreed or disagreed with you. that is and was America. The rowdier the disagreement, the more you disagree with someone else, the more you realize that the world, it takes all kinds and there are different views. In an incredibly short amount of time, the left has been closing in on our ability to express ourselves freely and openly without. Now, it's one thing to be criticized. It's okay. You know, we've lost the ability. Everything is backwards in the leftist lexicon. On the one hand, they create snowflakes who get offended at the drop of a hat. And that, of course, is the means by which other people and their views get shut down. You see how that works? So if you're a snowflake and you get the social acceptance and appreciation of the establishment and the mainstream media to be perpetually aggrieved and offended, that means other people have to change their communication in order to suit you. Well, that was yet another tactic in order to shut down conservative thought. Case in point, what's been going on this past week, Judge Jeanine Pirro has been suspended for 2 weeks. A lot of people on the internet are saying that she is done. Well, she isn't done yet, but she may well be. Fox News continues to move further and further to the left as the children of Rupert Murdoch take over Fox News. Used to be during Roger Ailes and other people who are no longer there, Bill Shine, that Fox News was a right-of-center media outlet. It had more diversity of thought than any of the networks today, cable or otherwise, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, Washington Post in the print media, New York Times. They're closing in and trying to shut down conservative thought. This is a profoundly serious thing that we've been watching on steroids. And even this little bitty internet radio program that I'm doing right now is an expression of the free market, of our First Amendment rights. And by the way, just as an aside, free speech is often a misnomer. We have the spirit of free speech, the spirit of free expression, but the First Amendment exists primarily so that the government cannot punish you for what you say. And we're losing that as well. We're losing all manner of free expression through the back door of calling for boycotts and calling for shutting down and firing anyone who expresses an opinion that isn't acceptable to the left. You tell me if conservatives do that same thing. The moral equivalence simply isn't there. Conservatives do not do the same thing. Why? Well, partly because conservatives are more comfortable debating the issues and they're more comfortable with disagreement. Because you see, we were brought up to think in terms of individual disagreement, not collective disagreement or collective marching in lockstep to whatever is the acceptable viewpoint of the day, no matter how crazy and insane that acceptable viewpoint is. I submit to you that one of the reasons the left must shut down its opposition is because it doesn't have an argument. If a good argument is made for why there's no such thing as toxic masculinity, amazing the number of people, even some on the right of center, they actually believe in something called toxic masculinity. That's utter nonsense. There could be a toxic person, but masculinity itself is not toxic. But that is a pejorative, an attack on masculinity itself. And if you've listened to my program very much at all, you'll know that straight men are a direct threat to socialists, hard left, and progressive people. Why? Because straight men, and that doesn't mean that they have a monopoly on this, but straight men tend to be independent, they tend to be resilient, they tend to be self-sufficient, they want to protect their families, they are willing to stand up against anyone who would harm their family, and the intent of socialists to make the government, the husband, the government, God, the government to take care of people, which really is the precursor to people being serfs and subjects rather than citizens. Well, straight men are a threat to all of that. So have you ever noticed, I'm going to keep saying this until someone notices, I may have to write a column about this. It's very interesting that the this absurd notion that there is no such thing as gender, that gender is fluid, which is the biggest bunch of nonsense I've ever heard, along with so much else in the leftist lexicon of illogical thought. Say that fast 5 times. Have you ever noticed that transgenders who go from male to female are always more celebrated than transgenders who go from female to male? Because anything male is hated right now in this country. Women don't want to be men. And nobody wants to celebrate masculinity. Well, it's the yin to the female yang. And yet the left used to even celebrate that. Remember Zen, yin and yang, the female and the masculine and the feminine? Well, the left doesn't like that. The left likes things feminine. Feminine meaning to receive, to submit, to need protection. Now, this is all symbolic, you understand. Have you noticed how, and I've said this again many times, I'm going to keep on saying it, that in the 70s, feminism meant I can be just as tough and strong as a man. Now feminism means I'm a victim. I need to be protected by the government because men are mean, terrible, cold creatures, and I need to be protected from them. I need to look to the government to protect me from mean men. And notice, they don't want to make any exceptions. These are broad stereotypes and generalities, which I thought the left used to be against. Remember when they were against stereotypes? Not anymore. They love stereotypes. They like to stereotype men, conservatives, Christians, traditionalists, people who love America. Those are the people they want to stereotype as all evil, Neanderthal. I mean, all of this stereotyping bigotry is coming from the left today. So while Fox News seems to be getting rid of Judge Jeanine and seems to be happy attacking Tucker Carlson, although Tucker Carlson isn't exactly a lover of Donald Trump, it seems like Fox News is on track to become just another CNN or MSNBC, God forbid. That is tremendously disturbing because bit by bit by bit, the light is going out on dissent in this country. Lights are going out. The media is beginning to cast a pall, and it is appalling, on free expression in this country. And everybody's marching in lockstep, no matter how much the lies. It's very disturbing. And they're living in a bubble. And so here I sit, here we sit, here you sit to talk to your neighbors. Today, even wearing a Make America Great Again hat, people are afraid to do that. That's the stuff of the Soviet Union. I encourage you to wear that hat and wear it proudly. That is the kind of bullying that is going on in this country, and it is becoming, and it is a function of the left. You cannot make a moral equivalence to any of that. You simply can't do it, because this is a function of the left. And even 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the left were the vanguards of talking about individualism. As I mentioned, women, strong as men, which isn't true either. Physically, they're not. Remember the tennis match between Bobby, whatever his name was, and Billie Jean King? Well, Bobby won because guess what? Women are not physically, genetically as strong as men. And what do you have today? Men pretending to be women and competing with women. Can you imagine 30 years ago, the feminists, more than 30 years ago, feminists of the 70s tolerating that? No, they wouldn't tolerate that at all. Now, they are being bullied along with the rest of us to tolerate that. Martina Navratilova being bullied along with the rest of us to tolerate that. In just a few minutes, if my my delightful producer, Doug, will get our guest on the phone. We're going to welcome her a little bit early. So the overall theme here is we cannot afford to knuckle under. If you knuckle under, it's like a muscle. If you don't use your free expression or your right to free speech, you will lose it. And we want to save this country for the next generation and the generation after that and the generation after that. Another point that I want to make before we move on to our guest, something on my list of things to talk to you about. Right now, we have this little kerfuffle. I love that word, kerfuffle, between John McCain and Donald Trump. Well, John McCain posthumously. Actually, it's John McCain's daughter, Meghan McCain, who is furious that Donald Trump is again attacking John McCain. This is going on right now, and people who don't have a stomach for hardcore politics cannot figure out why this is happening right now. But it is. And there's always a purpose behind what Trump does. Like him or not, and I like him a lot, Donald Trump is doing this for a reason. Because John McCain was up to his eyeballs in a false scenario, to basically to have a soft coup, to unseat a duly elected president. You know, we talk about the peaceful transition of power. You're talking about overturning an election with false information, with false accusations, actually accusations of what they did themselves. Now, the reason I bring this up is because too many commentators are constantly talking about John McCain just has an emotional vendetta, an emotional vendetta against Donald Trump. And so do the McCains, all the McCains. They just hate him. I just want to say for the record, I don't think so. I think it's policy. I think Donald Trump has been a threat to the McCains and to all the establishment people. And that is why they have opposed him. There are no accidents in politics. You mean to tell me they don't tolerate people that they hate all the time if they can help each other? Well, establishment politicians do it all the time. Obama and Hillary. I don't think they like each other for a second. I think they hate each other. But they were prepared to do business with each other and to protect each other's back. We are superimposing our sensibilities into a system that runs by a different set of rules. I think John McCain was out to get Trump because Trump represented opposition to business as usual, the kind of corruption that's been going on in Washington, and an America First agenda. We'll have to talk about that more in a little bit, because I am delighted to welcome my guest here to Spouting Off, Renee Jolly. As I mentioned to you, she is the parent of a son who was falsely accused by a female student and wrongfully expelled from his university. Renee Jolly, welcome to Spouting Off. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me on today.
Well, I'm delighted to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Sure. So I am the mom, as you mentioned, of an expelled college student who originally was just fighting for justice for my son. But it has turned into me becoming an advocate for due process and fairness for all university students across America, because what we have learned now is that the likelihood of a male student who was accused of sexual assault on a college campus, the likelihood of that for him to be expelled is significantly greater than not. So we have to get back to fairness and due process. We have to get back to fair investigations. And that is why I'm on today. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to help your listeners understand that mm-hmm. we need to change processes on university campuses, as well as move away from this start by believing philosophy and theory and training that you need to believe the accuser, when in fact that means you're also then disbelieving the accused. And where's their fairness and justice in that?
We have time to get into this. That's why I wanted to have you on a little bit early, so that we can really delve into this a little bit. This whole idea of believing the accuser, how first did we get here, Renee Jolly? How did we get here?
So start by believing and believe the accuser really has its foundations where a lot of funding started to come from the government back in around 2011. And it really stemmed from there being victims of sexual assault who felt like they were not being heard. And so in order to get heard, this funding started to become available. But what's happened is what originally was probably meant to be a good thing has turned on to swinging all the way to the left, where originally women felt like they weren't believed. Now all women are believed, regardless of what the evidence shows. And that is kind of how we've gotten here. So we swung the pendulum, then you throw a hashtag on front of something and it becomes a movement. And trends on Twitter and, it just goes crazy.
Is this start by believing, the hashtag? Start by believing?
Right, start by believing.
That's where you're supposed to start with an accusation, is believing the accuser, no matter who it is or why it is?
Right. The federal government...
Yeah.
The Department of Justice, just in the recent years, has funded $1.4 million towards training around Start by Believing. What that means is that, and this is not only on university campuses with the investigators and the student conduct office or what have you. It's also police departments across the nation are beginning to get trained in the Start by Believing, which means that they're moving away from more of the objective, honest, and fair investigations, and now they're being trained to eliminate that neutral fact-finding and instead start by believing. But what research has shown is that investigators who develop a belief early on that a suspect is guilty is far more likely to seek evidence that confirms that preconception and to reject evidence that counters the belief.
Yes, let's go slow also again, because you mentioned something. You're more generous of heart than I am when you said that it was probably a good thing and all this money whenever you see a whole bunch of money go towards something, and I'll just say this, I don't know if you, it's okay if you don't agree with me, but you probably didn't hear my monologue about how straight men are now the enemy in the hard left agenda towards socialism. But if money is being spent to believe accusers of straight men, regardless of the evidence in a case, well, that feeds right into my earlier monologue, doesn't it?
It sure does.
It does.
They're really not getting a fair process. We have students that, you know, because I'm part of a couple of groups that are nonprofits that really are starting to bring some to light this injustice that's going on college campuses. But we have some students who were expelled from their university, even though the criminal justice system, when they went before a jury, found them innocent. But yet the university is still standing by their, what we call sham investigations, and expelling them.
How can they do that? What's their reasoning behind that?
Their reasoning is that they feel the student still violated their student conduct code. But yet the evidence does not support that. And, you know, my son, for example, is one of those students. He didn't have a criminal case, but yet when he went before the student conduct office, he went there without any knowledge of what he was being accused of, who was accusing him. He didn't have any written notice of the allegations. He didn't get an opportunity to review evidence. He didn't get a chance to cross-examine or ask questions of the accuser. He didn't get a right to a hearing. But there was, in my son's case, evidence that showed, and including pictorial evidence and eyewitnesses who walked in on the interaction, that he was not at fault, that he was actually more likely than not the one who was sexually assaulted by his accuser while he was passed out. And the school ignored that evidence because those investigators who were not police officers, but who were trained in the start by believing mentality and philosophy, ignored all that evidence because they were he felt like he did not have any opportunity to even clear his name, that he was already guilty from the outset.
To help the listeners understand, why don't you tell us, if you can, and I think you can, your son's case? Can you tell us kind of a slightly cliff note version of the case itself so we can all understand what exactly happened?
Sure. So in my son's case, he was called in to the student conduct office or emailed to come in, and said that he may have violated the student conduct code. He had no idea what it was about. He knew he didn't do anything wrong, so he went ahead and went in there, was able to bring a friend, and was told that at that time that he had been accused of sexual assault. So he found out what the information was, and who the accuser was at that time. But he had only 15 minutes to tell his version of the story, not even knowing what hers was. And that was his only opportunity. 2 months later, he was expelled. And the school...
Who did he
was able to
tell his story to?
Excuse me?
Who did he tell his story to?
Two investigators in the student conduct office who were Title IX investigators.
And Title IX.
Title IX.
Tell us what Title IX is.
So, yeah. Tell us what Title IX
is. We got to back up a little.
Yeah, okay. So Title IX was originally, it came about, I believe, I want to say it was around 40 years ago, and it was really meant for gender equality for women to have gender equality when it came to sports on college campuses. And so now Title IX has expanded to now student conduct issues. And I can even back up a little further. I'm not sure if this has been shared on your radio station, but back in 2011, the Obama administration sent out a letter to all of the universities, and it was we call it the Dear Colleague Letter, but it basically told the universities that if they didn't clamp down hard on sexual assault allegations, then they ran the risk or of losing federal funding. Well, for some of these schools, like my son's, it was into the millions of dollars per year of grant money from the government. So in order to show that the university was clamping down hard on sexual assault allegations, any accusation became an expulsion or suspension for what was typically the male student who was being accused.
And so just an accusation would result in punishment without due process.
Exactly. Exactly. Hmm.
Gee, you know, Renee, yeah. As an aside, kind of makes you think that the Kavanaugh case didn't happen in a vacuum, doesn't it?
Oh, right. Yes, the Kavanaugh case was, I think, an eye-opener for the American population to understand what is really happening with these accusations. It doesn't really matter who's more believable. It really matters what the evidence shows.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, and if the evidence supported the accused, then the accused is not guilty.
This is a very important point that I want to emphasize, because this is a complex issue, and you are the perfect spokesperson for a lot of what we're seeing here. But I think that the Brett Kavanaugh hearings were indeed an eye-opener for a lot of people who could not understand these hysterical, hair-on-fire people coming out of the woodwork, you know, clamoring and slamming down their fists on the doors of the Supreme Court, just believing anything this accuser said when there were massive holes in her story you could drive a truck through. Right. I think a lot of citizens, when they saw that, thought that this was happening in some kind of a vacuum. Your point here today on Spouting Off is that the seeds of this kind of ripping apart of due process, some of our basic foundations in our country, happened in 2011 and before, during which administration?
The Obama
administration. Funny how that happens, isn't it? With
right.
money, all universities to go after straight men and believe the accuser beforehand. I've got to say this. Wasn't it the left years and years ago who said that just because someone made an accusation of murder, that someone shouldn't go to the electric chair, and that people are wrong sometimes about accusations of crimes? But suddenly they make a 180 when it has to do with sexual harassment, sexual assault, or anything to do with gender in 2019. You have to believe the accuser no matter what. This
yes.
is deeply disturbing. So tell us what happened next in your son's story so we can understand better.
Right. So, after he had his 15 minutes of being able to tell his side of the story when he didn't know the other side, he gave a list of people who could corroborate what he's saying. And he had pictures of hickeys on his neck the next morning and witnesses that had walked in the room and saw the interaction, and they came and gave their version. My son didn't hear anything for 2 months. And 2 months later, he got an email from the school saying he'd been found guilty of sexual assault with force, which, let's just say, it's called rape. You know, the definition is rape, and you are expelled. So at that point, we hired attorneys, criminal attorney, civil attorney, private investigator to get more information, which we appealed the decision at the school, but they stuck by their original, and he was expelled and lost. He was a full-ride Army ROTC cadet. He lost his entire scholarship, and he has to pay back the government for the amount of money they gave him for his scholarship. So, you know, it completely changed his trajectory, and not just his life, but, you know, it affects the entire family. And it's not just him. There are well over 1,000 students in the last 3 years that have been expelled wrongfully. And there's a lot of litigation that's gone on. There's and the courts are finally, the eyes are being opened, and the courts are more often siding with the students, and they are reprimanding
which
the universities.
Student? Which student? The student that's been accused?
Yes, the student that's been accused, because what's happening are the students are suing the universities for the way that they were wrongfully treated.
Well, that's a good thing. The 1,000 people that you mentioned that you cite, is that across the country or?
That's across the country.
That's 1,000?
Yeah, and it's over 1,000, and those are just the students that have contacted a nonprofit called FACE, Families Advocating for Campus Equality. It's a group of parents that basically banded together about 4 years ago, and we have a nonprofit now, and we help support one another. We have attorneys on board that are fighting for the rights of these students, and we have students who are using the Department of Education Office of Civil Rights to do investigations into their school, which is what's going on with my son right now. And you know, we're a small group of people who are pushing forward, trying to get some changes so that more students in the future don't have to go through what our students already had. And you're right, you're right in saying that it's very often the straight white male, and it's also a lot of college athletes as well.
Well, and possibly, well, we're going to get into that. Can you stick with us for a minute for a commercial break?
Sure, absolutely.
That's wonderful. We're talking to Renee Jolly, whose son was falsely accused by a female student and wrongfully expelled. Very serious issues. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. You're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio Station 1. Karen Cataline, stay tuned.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Hi, I'm Joy, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on why the Constitution limits government.
James Madison writes in Federalist 51 that men are not angels. Their passions and self-interest often get the better of their reason and sense of justice. So we need government in order to protect our rights against those who would take them away. But for the same reason, Madison writes, government must be limited, because people in government have passions and interests too. Many Americans today forget this. Supposing that we can do away with constitutional limits on government, supposing that the unelected bureaucrats being put in charge of our health care, for example, will rule as if they are angels, If Madison was correct about human nature, this is foolish and dangerous.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket Constitution and Declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Thank you for staying with us. This is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off. I am delighted to be speaking with Renee Jolly, who is the parent of a son who was falsely accused by a female student and wrongfully expelled from his school, his university. He was an ROTC cadet, and Renee has had the courage to come out and speak frankly about this whole idea of start by believing, a highly funded, government-funded program which basically gets rid of due process and claims that if you're accused, you should be believed. This is a very, very dangerous idea. Thanks again for staying with us, Renee.
You're welcome, Karen. Absolutely.
Great. So when we were speaking before the break, you were telling the story of what happened to your son. I wondered, what did your son say as to what happened in this incident? You said that he actually was hurt in some way and had marks on his body. What does he say happened that wasn't listened to?
Yeah, thank you for asking, Karen. My son was passed out. He has no recollection of the night. They were both drinking, but my son had passed out. And so you have to go with what the evidence shows and the eyewitness statements and the fact that the accuser was changing her story over and over and over again, adding to it, taking away from it. And but because she was the accuser and because she was being, the investigators were using the start by believing theory and training, her lack of consistency in her statements was given to trauma-informed. Because she was traumatized, she couldn't quite remember right, and so pieces kept coming and going, very much like the Kavanaugh hearing.
It sounds a lot like that, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
Nobody touched her. Nobody questioned her. Nobody contradicted her story, and it was outlandish and preposterous. So right. You'd already been through something like this. What did you think while you were watching right. The Kavanaugh story? Deja vu?
Deja vu. I thought this is just the the older adult version. You know, you're dealing with college students, but it was the same story. Same story, just different characters. And and you know, so when my son, you know, woke up the next morning and he had hickeys all over his neck, that's when, you know, he was like, what happened, you know? And he has the photographs of the hickeys. But it was really about 6 weeks later that that he was called into the student conduct office. But, you know, at that time when, as a male student, you know, you don't really think, I don't think he was even thinking that maybe he was the one who potentially was sexually assaulted. Males don't necessarily think the same as females do, but he was unable to consent to the act. And so why did his accuser go forward? And, you know, that's the million-dollar question. We don't know why. You know, it could have been buyer's remorse, as they call it, or regret, but regret doesn't equal rape. It could have been this happened in the fall, and she was a relatively new freshman to the university. There's a lot of drinking going on. In fact, a lot of these accusations occur in the fall because that's when most of the drinking and partying goes overboard when students kind of start back on campus, the September, October timeframe.
Do you think now that you have a few more pieces of the puzzle, and it seems as if he was clearly wrongfully accused? I mean, we are jurors here, but if it is in fact true that he was wrongfully accused, falsely accused, do you think that he was targeted by somebody for a particular reason?
No, I don't think he was targeted. We've never felt that. You get college students who are drinking. This particular female that accused him was not somebody you'd want to take home to your mom. So there was, you know, there was disappointment, I think, even on our end as parents, thinking, you know, why did you even get involved in that type of situation with?
Well, was he dating her? Did he have some romantic connection with her prior to this incident?
No, it was a one night stand. They met each other in a bar, and her and a girlfriend and my son went back to his room, and this girl who accused my son asked her friend to leave, and and even her friend was one of the people who gave her witness testimony to the school, and her side corroborated my son's side of the story, and the school did not include that in their final 16-page investigation report. We found that through the private attorney.
Wow.
So there was exculpatory information given, but it was omitted, you know, from the final investigative report because it corroborated my son's side of the story. And that is what is, you know, the start by believing. Again, they begin believing the accuser, and so they're presuming the guilt of the accused, and they even leave off information that can support the accused side of the story, just like my son.
And you know, during the break, Renee, I was mentioning to you that when you see this kind of, I see it as a tactic. I see it as a left-wing tactic for very specific political purposes. Do I understand all of the reasons for it? No, but I have a pretty good hunch about what's going on here and why so much money would go towards destroying due process in college campuses. Do you have a sense of that yourself? Do you think that there was well, what we were talking about, forgive me, I got off track here. We were talking off the air about how long it takes for people to organize around the country when they've been the victim of an injustice and they're all comparing notes. It takes a while to compare notes. You mentioned this one organization, FACE, and you mentioned that it started in 2011, but you didn't start to organize till about 2014, 15? Something like that, 5 years later.
Right.
A lot of damage gets done before that. Were you in on this sort of early on, trying to help organize families to compare notes about what had happened to them?
No, I actually joined. FACE was started by four moms who found each other, and it really did not become a nonprofit until 2014. And then since then, you know, we've now had nearly 5 years to grow, and it's, you know, grown by leaps and bounds. This year, we're just in mid-March, there's been well over 200 families who have contacted FACE from this year. And it's, you know, it's we're easily found now on a Google search, but back then, in the beginnings, it was hard to find, you know, where to go to. It took us a couple years to, you know, we thought we were an anomaly with what happened to our son.
Right,
really,
and that's why these things are sprung on people, so that they really don't know where to turn. Sometimes, if there's really something going on, how is your son doing now?
He's better. For him, it's really almost 5 years post the expulsion. Fortunately, even though he was expelled, he was able to get into another university at a state school, and he told them what happened. And they looked at all of the evidence. They looked at the Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, investigation that was beginning, and they admitted him and he graduated. So we're very grateful for that. But he was denied acceptance into multiple schools because he was seen as a liability. He had a record against the school. He has a student conduct record showing sexual assault. So, you know, with something like that, it pretty much limits your possibilities to get into a school and finish your education. And we have a lot of students who have not been able to do that, even though, you know, the evidence or some of them, like I said, had criminal cases with juries and were seen as they were not guilty. And the school still expelled them and still kept their student conduct record with a violation.
Yeah, Renee, I'm going to just say it straight out here because we only have a minute or two left. It's very hard for people to get their brain around the idea that a group of people, a political ideology, a university, or people with such a lot of power could have a vested interest in proliferating a lie and an injustice on a person when somebody is judged to not be guilty, and yet the university insists on punishing an innocent person in the face of evidence the other way around. You have to start asking questions. Why would such an ideology want to destroy the life and reputation of anyone? Why? Why would they want to do that? Have you had thoughts about that yourself?
You know, as parents, we often say, you know, how can their hearts be so hardened to the truth? And, you know, there's a lot of the government, of course, has put a lot of pressure. There's still a lot of people employed at the universities who were part of the Obama administration. And so they still have that ideology and are still functioning like they did back in 2011 with feeling they're being pressured to clamp down hard on sexual assault allegations. The Me Too movement is rampant and growing by leaps and bounds. The 1 in 5 statistic, that 1 in 5, you know, students on college campuses, females, get sexually assaulted, has been pushed and pushed. When the Bureau of Justice Statistics just came out in the last few weeks saying a more accurate estimate is 1 in 45, but people are still,
wow, what a difference!
Absolutely, what a difference! But yet many people are still have this mindset of 1 in 5.
It's a false narrative.
We need to clamp down hard. It is very false.
It's a false narrative. We're going to have to leave it there. Renee, we thank you so much for speaking out, for having strength. This is what every person needs to do, regardless of whether it agrees with me or you or anyone else, to speak up. Where can people learn more about you if they've been, or their son, or usually it is a son, been a victim of this sort of thing? Where can they go for help, assistance, and support?
So I would send them to two places. One would be FACE, Families Advocating for Campus Equality, to get help for their son or their students. The second, to educate themselves more on this, would be SaveServices.org. That's Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, SaveServices.org.
Spell that out for everybody. S-A-V-E Services?
Yes. S-A-V-E Services.org.
.org. And is there a website for FACE as well?
Yeah, facecampusequality.org.
Face Campus Equality, all spelled out, right? .org.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your time. We really, really appreciate it. We're glad your son is doing so much better. Thanks for being with us on Spouting Off.
Appreciate the opportunity, Karen.
My pleasure. Well, that's it for this edition of Spouting Off. If you'd like to join me or connect with me, you can go to www.karencataline.com, Facebook, Karen Cataline, or Twitter. Love those Twitter followers at karencataline.com. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio, and to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when we'll have a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.